Welcome to Accounting High.
Kid, I really want to let kids know that illegal drugs are bad news.
Yes, David, it's true. Actually, Michael, the fact is that one in 18 high school seniors smokes marijuana daily. And then there are the occasional users which account
for... Get this through your CPU. They don't care about statistics.
You know, you're right. I've got it. Just tell them illegal drugs are bad, so don't mess with them.
Illegal drugs are bad news. Don't mess with them.
May I have your attention, please? I repeat, may I have your attention, please?
This is another public service announcement brought to you in part
by Accounting High.
The views and events expressed here are
of the next generation of accounting and tech professionals leading this space.
Welcome to Accounting High. Whether you loved high school or you hated it, here we're on a mission to set our own traditions. Here's your chance to be a part of an unforgettable experience redone. So sit back, relax, and open your mind because class is in session.
Anything else?
Yeah.
So without further ado, introducing the star of our show,
Scotty and Amber and Evan and a man.
We're going to have a problem here.
Class is in session. I'm so happy to have Miss Amber Setter here with me today. We've been talking for a couple months now, planning this episode. It's going to be great. What can we talk about here with psychedelics? It's going to be a business opportunity for some if they work with clients that are of different business types. Like if you have a cannabis niche, that's going to be a niche for certain people in certain states at some point. So that's a reason to talk about it for one.
Yeah. So I recently have just sort of outed myself for my love for psychedelic assisted therapy. And my love for it comes from my own experiences and my own healing journey and personal development, having sat with a variety of medicines and finding it to be the most efficient and effective personal development I've ever done, right? Like one night with medicine could be like 10 years of therapy. I'm also really passionate about it because, as you mentioned, it's about to be a booming business. And in fact, it's already kind of here, but people don't realize it. Like
people don't talk about it enough too, because I was just at an event at, you know, I don't even know if I should say whose event it was, because then they may think I'm going to get them in trouble, but it doesn't, I don't even need to say any names, but somebody had it in a package that they bought somewhere, probably it was Europe, I forgot where, and it was mushrooms, but it was, you know, not mushrooms, but it was psilocybin in a chocolate. And it was manufactured. It was delicious, but I had one. All right. So that's what I'm saying. Like you will be able to buy it in stores.
Well, anyone who's going to be listening to this podcast now is probably going to get a targeted ad through Instagram, because I'm getting targeted ads, psilocybin, chocolates, gummies, medicine experiences in my local area. Like that's how big and alive it is. And it is surprising to me that accounting's not talking about it. And I say that from the perspective of having watched how cannabis unfolded. So like many years ago, I was on the board of trustees for the California Society of CPAs Education Foundation, sort of like their CPE umbrella. And we went up to network and connect with the Washington State Society. And the Washington State Society was like, oh, we had this like webinar on cannabis, and it was so popular, like our servers crashed, yada, yada. And so, you know, if you're in the business of CPE, you want to have an event so popular, it crashed.
Your servers crash.
Right? Yeah. You want that. Like, you want that kind of attendance. But they were saying, right, like farmers were coming in and asking their CPAs, like, well, it's legal. And, you know, should I change my crop from soybean to marijuana? Like, show me the money. This is a burgeoning industry. And I am wildly.
Every state I go to, I can buy weed now, except for the one that I live in.
Well, on the lines of psychedelics, it's already legal in Oregon. So they opened up psilocybin centers.
That's where I got my chocolates when I was up there.
All right. Colorado, it's already legal, but they're writing in the regulations of what it's going to look like.
Because you can't buy it in the stores in Colorado.
Not yet. But the service numbers are coming. And then it's on, like, I don't know, probably 30 other ballots. Like all of these places, have it on the ballot. It's in, they want to put it on in California and get it legalized.
And well, let me just say, for anybody listening, don't knock it till you try it, because the experience of psychedelics in a controlled dosage really connects you to your life, to the world, to nature, to anything. Like, and I'm not just being trippy, hippie type talk, but anybody I talk to that's just experiencing it now at a later age too, you know, they're older, you know, they're, we've discussed, you and I have discussed How to Change Your Mind, the Netflix series. That's easy for anybody to pick up. The book is amazing. My wife's reading it now. So How to Change Your Mind by, what's his name?
Michael Pollan.
Michael Pollan. Yeah.
Yeah. And
Pollock?
Pollan, P-O-L-L-A-N. Okay. But yeah, as I shared at the beginning, like my upbringing was being around drug addicts, and that was very painful for me. And so growing up in the 1980s with the Nancy Reagan programming of Just Say No.
Say yes to your life. And when it comes to drugs and alcohol, just say no.
And for me, in my worldview, like, drugs are bad. Like, there was a period where my mom was homeless. Like, I don't mess around with drugs. And when you take these medicines and you use them in a therapeutic setting, in with intention, with reverence, they're deeply healing. And
well, because they're not like heroin, which the painkiller and the epidemic of drugs that we have, and that, speaking of Netflix, that series is dope, the one with Matthew Broderick, Painkiller. That's heroin that they were pushing through pharmacies to basically anybody with a mid pain level in rural America or anywhere in America. We now have an epidemic of, and it's not a pandemic, it's an epidemic of heroin addicts in our country. And we still do, because of what they started with those. So I'm very against certain types of drugs and practices, but there are other types of drugs that's because I do, I'm branded now that I talk about drugs because I talk about weed. Like, now I'm the drug guy. So now I have to at least make it very clear, abundantly clear, that this is not a heroin type substance. This is not that type of drug. And those types of drugs are legal. You can still now go, or you hurt yourself real bad, they're going to prescribe you painkillers. They're going to prescribe you synthetic heroin.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I want to be the drug girl for the psychedelics. So I'll just like raise my hand and I want to put that crown on my head. If anyone wants to talk about it, learn about it. And on the topic of drugs, there are some psychedelic medicines that they're using to cure people from addiction. So there's going to be released a new documentary coming out about
drugs to save the drugs. Drugs use one type to save for the other.
Yes. So Ibogaine, people can do that. And in one setting, they can be just completely cured from their addiction to heroin with none of the withdrawals. And so this is helping for mental health. It's helping veterans for PTSD. It's helping for like addiction. There's so many possibilities. And that's why it's being fast tracked through the FDA. So they're anticipating MDMA, which is ecstasy. Some people know it as a party drug, but when
Molly, ecstasy, Molly, MDMA, yeah.
When you use it in a therapeutic setting, it's a heart opener, so you can go back and relive whatever trauma is causing you to numb out.
It's an empathy. It's an empathy drug.
Yes.
It creates more empathy, and you can then feel for the other people around you. It opens you up to experience. It gets you out of the equation as far as being in the way. That's another.
Yeah. And that's anticipated for FDA approval first. And then second will be psilocybin. But again, psilocybin's already state by state. So back to accounting, right? Like, what happened with cannabis? It's a complicated business when it's legal in parts of the world and not of our world, right? And that's where I'm fascinated when I ask like a cannabis expert, well, what are your thoughts on psychedelics? Like, if it's, because I understand, the way I understand cannabis, it's like it's illegal at the federal level, but not at the state. So you can't get like banking and all
or
this
you
stuff.
Can't use a card. I was at my first ever shop that took a debit card ever. most anytime you go to a dispensary, it is always cash because right. banks are afraid of it.
Right. And then what's going to happen if, let's say, MDMA is FDA approved? You know, like what, how does this change the game?
It's FDA, that's different though, right? On a federal level, that's what I've always been saying. Like North Carolina as a state will never, won't make it, they won't make the first step. But if it's federally legal, then North Carolina is already ready to, like, everybody's ready to just Commerce City because all these vape shops are going to turn into dispensaries. You know, like they're already selling a form of it, but it's just like now there's loopholes in certain states. So you can sell this, but that is not decriminalized. It's like a certain type of strain. It's basically the same thing that they're selling at these stores. Delta 8 is what they call it, or Delta 9.
Yeah. But, and similar, what people may or may not realize, there's already like 1,300 legal ketamine service centers. And so, so those are already existing. So I don't know if I had like a ketamine service center and already had some licensed psychotherapists there helping people process it and mushrooms became legal. Why wouldn't I just add those to the menu? Like that,
those
like
services. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's so obvious to see what's going on.
I didn't know about the ketamine clinic thing until recently when I was in St. Louis, somebody had told me about that.
Yeah. I didn't.
So that's what the street name for that was, Special K.
I don't know. I'm not sure. Okay.
The phrase is a K-hole is what I knew of.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I think that skipped my, I'm a little too old for that. Like no one was doing ketamine when I was younger, but.
Well, you only graduated 4 years past me, right? That's right. When I graduated high school.
I was a little, remember I was off gallivanting in the south of France and struggling through junior.
Okay. Well, I wasn't doing, to be clear, I wasn't doing any ketamine. I didn't do any Special K, but I knew of it. And people would talk about K-hole and like getting trapped in that. And I probably saw it on TV, but that's something that people go and voluntarily experience now. And they say it is hell. Like the first few hours of it, they are tortured. But to get on the other side, they say it's cathartic. And to be on the other side of that, it's necessary. And they've done it multiple times. They've gone back because it's almost like a spiritual way of purging themselves of getting rid of all the toxins or the toxic traits or the toxic emotions, all of it.
If it works for someone, fantastic. Like, I mean, that goes kind of back to the premise of coaching. Like only each person knows in their own self what works for them. And that's like, if you look at, you're thinking of like plant medicine, definitely do your homework because what worked for one person might not work for another. And you want to be smart about this stuff because you're entering into another state of consciousness.
But right now, the rules make it very difficult to even do this in a safe way in a lot of areas.
True. But you also, I went to Costa Rica on vacation and twice psilocybin.
Ayahuasca.
Farmers Market. And there's tons of ayahuasca retreat centers there, right? So there's... And that was when I first got introduced to plant medicine through a Navy SEAL. And I'm like, how is it that veterans who protect our country have to travel to Mexico to get treatment for protecting our country? And that it's like this paradox, but many other places don't relate to these plants, you know, like ayahuasca is the combination. They make a tea from like a vine and a flower. Like these aren't things made in a lab. MDMA is made in a lab. LSD is made in a lab. And that's kind of why those aren't my jam. I just am more of like organic food and grass fed. Like I kind of have just stuck to the plants for me personally. Mm-hmm. Or, well, I did something called 5-MeO-DMT, which is
DMT.
The secretion from a toad. So that did not grow.
Toad? That's what that is?
It's called smoking the toad, yeah.
Wow. Okay. I have not heard. I've heard of DMT. I did not know it came from a toad. It still comes from the earth.
Well, Michael Pollan talks about it in his book, How to Change Your Mind. He did it, and he said that is a medicine that he would not do again, that it was just kind of uncomfortable, and he wouldn't do it again.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if I'm ready for more uncomfort. I already go through it almost all day, every day. So
yeah.
Not always, but some days more than others. Thank you. for this discussion, Amber. This has been dope. I don't know what we missed. I don't know if there's anything that we left on the table here, but I appreciate you. Appreciate you coming on. This is dope. Real dope. How can our listeners, how can our students find more of you? What if they like what they hear and they're that ideal person that needs a coach right now, like they're going through that change? Where do they find Amber? LinkedIn for sure.
LinkedIn for sure. And then we're also at conscious.cpa. We've got an Instagram account. My social team wants me to get on TikTok. I'll probably be on there soon. But yeah, I just, you know, I'm always down to connect and chat and be disruptive and working on being that self-transforming mind of hearing different inputs and ideas. And I just really enjoyed the opportunity to connect with you too, where I'd have the space to
shout out to David Leary.
Shout out to David Leary, because David Leary was like, hey, you want to talk about some accounting stuff? And I'm like, I do, David, but also really, I'm ready to talk about psychedelics. And he's like, oh, I know who you got to talk to. You got to go on Accounting High.
Dope. Yeah. I mean, and we can keep talking too, but it's only time is going to tell too. Time will be on our side with a lot of this stuff. And later people will come to realize and see the light. Like, it's just like anything else. And the difference between a psychedelic and a painkiller or a heroin type substance is tremendous. The difference between those and what they can do for lives.
Yes.
So they're not going to go, you know, it's not going to make you flip out and go crazy and like ruin your life. And just by doing that, like but over time, slowly, those painkillers will do that. And it's, you know, that's pretty impactful. That gave me a lot of anxiety watching that show, the painkiller show on Netflix. But I put myself through it because I know a lot of these things, but the stories that they're telling on this show, it's incredible. My wife got hooked on it. She watched a couple episodes and then she plowed through it. So it's a good one for anybody who wants to see the bad sides of drugs. Like, this is an epidemic that we're still dealing with.
Yeah, so. It is. It's very sad. My post on LinkedIn where I finally owned my truth here was like, I believe a lot of our companies are being run by people that lack healing, right? People that don't even realize that their trauma is impacting their leadership and how they're leading and how they're treating their people. And I say that with years of experience of coaching, right? When there's a toxic boss, it's usually because they had trauma that's unresolved.
Unresolved.
Unresolved trauma. And
repressed and pushed down, and they don't even address it. They don't even know it's there.
Yes. And so there's a concept. So PTSD, we're familiar with, like post-traumatic stress disorder, and that was not an official diagnosis until the 80s. So all these, you know, people came back from Vietnam, they're totally struggling and they can't diagnose it and they can't treat it until they diagnose it. So it went into something called the DSM, which is the Diagnostic Symptoms Manual. That's what like therapists and psychologists use to diagnose mental health issues. So CPTSD is complex PTSD, the stuff that I buried. Right. So for me, Amber Sutter, growing up and having visitation with my mom, who was a drug addict, that would like have me, she would tell me things that weren't true. She offered me to snort cocaine with her when I was 16. Like, I went back and did plant medicine, and that 16-year-old self didn't even, I processed that memory that I didn't even know was buried. So there was a lot of me operating on top of a lot of pain and buried stuff. And that was the stuff that would trip me up in the workplace. It would trip me up in my romantic relationship. It would trip me up as a mom. And when you go back and you work on that stuff and you heal, and I'm not 100% healed. I think healing is a journey. It's not a destination.
Oh, I feel you. Yeah, for sure.
You work.
But you may think you're healed, but that's when you're not, right?
Not healed.
That's when you're worse off.
Pooh, you know, no, you're not. But like that stuff, if you don't work that through, you get in these unhealthy patterns of how you're in relationship with everyone.
And oh, yeah, yeah.
Clean up, because the ineffective leadership, the socialized mind, the lack of awareness, right? Like,
or the insecurities, or the, you know, there's a lot of things that get in the way.
Yeah. So a lot of possibility and power, and I had to stop not talking about it because I was afraid I wasn't going to be able to be invited to speak at conferences. I'm like, nope, I gotta do it. I gotta be the worker.
You're afraid of the AICPA or whoever else is in charge of those conferences. I know that feeling. People tell me not to talk about certain things. And the only reason I do is because I'm trying to be real. I'm trying to normalize the conversation too. It's not like I'm going around telling people they should go do drugs, whatever it is. People just don't like that word. They don't like talking about it. And then it represses like the fact that there's a lot of people that I was addicted to Klonopin. I was taking that for 15 years. I was in denial. I didn't think I was addicted. I needed it every day for my anxiety. Otherwise, I couldn't function. And by not taking that, that was a physical addiction. And that took, it was traumatic to get through that, to get on the other side of that. But being on the other side of that, I have a lot of anxiety that I have to live with, that I don't just have a pill that I can take to calm me down. I don't have that anymore. That was easy. That was an easy way out of that. This takes a lot more effort. And if you don't want to go through the pain of yourself sometimes, of being like, I have ADHD, I'm on the spectrums of all the spectrums. So there are certain things that it is prescribed to me. It could be prescribed to me again. It's something that I could still probably get, but I'm choosing not to take it because it also numbs you. There's things about it that, you know, so I was physically addicted to a drug. I stopped taking it. And now my mind is like a lot more clear. I have a lot more clarity, mental clarity. There's a lot I can say about being on the other side of that, but to say that I'm promoting drugs, I'm not. Like, there's a lot of drugs that are bad for, but everybody's got a different chemical disposition. Everybody reacts differently to different things. So some things may be good for somebody and it makes them a better person and they need that. While for others, it's detracting or pulling away from other parts of their life or people in their lives. So.
And you hit on sort of how I've reframed, well, what's a drug, right? So, I mean, to me, like, is a drug a mushroom that naturally just grows out of the ground? To me, a drug is either something that I consume or a behavior that I do so as to avoid my feelings.
They
right?
say, yeah, they say love is a drug, and that's not something
love
that's
a drug.
Yeah,
I'm so addicted to achievement. Like when I was 28 years
ambition.
Old. Ambition. I was like, I have to have a 3.96 GPA. I have to be president of the grad student association. I work my job, you know, my accounting job. I have a side hustle. Like, I have to prove to you how great I am. That was super addictive behavior, but society rewarded it. Billable hours, they can be an addiction. Like, what are you doing so that you don't actually have to be with the discomfort of whatever you're going through? And that's where, in my experience of doing these plant medicines in a safe, I would say safe way, in a healthy container with the guidance of like a legit shaman or a licensed psychotherapist, is I'm checking into my feelings. Like, I am not avoiding anything. Like, I went into a medicine journey where I was like, I really need help working through the relationship with my father, right? Like, my dad is 80 years old and he's still an alcoholic, right? And I don't know what happened in his world that he's drinks. Like, I've tried to ask questions and, you know, it's a fortress. He won't talk. But I can control how I react to being in relationship with him. I can intentionally eat some plants and go, help me, like, help me be a better daughter. Help me be more empathetic to him, right? Because there's a lot of times—
Be more empathetic and you get out of your own way and having a grudge or holding it against him when in some ways he's a victim of this.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, I don't want to victimize people or anything like that, but you know, like there's in some ways, like especially alcoholism, like that's, it's rampant. You can get alcohol at any time of day, anywhere, you know, within the most places, less than a mile away, you can go get some alcohol. And that's, there's things that you can get really easy. You know, you can hurt yourself. You get these other prescriptions, things like that. Those are the types of drugs that we can do. And there are the rules around that. So you can talk about drinking. You can talk about going to bars and having fun and getting drunk, but you can't talk about this other stuff because it's not as widespread. You still can't talk about marijuana because not every state is legal. So you might be in a state that's not legal.
Yeah, it's not socially accepted. That was my quotes, right? Like you, some places, it's just a new conversation. And I actually, a few years ago, when I was like, oh my God, like psychedelics are amazing. I want to talk about it, but I can't talk about it in accounting. I reached out to somebody who is lovely in the profession. And I was like, I need some mentorship here. You know, like this person is really good at putting up a divergent perspective. And so I was like, what do I do? And the response was, well, you're just a crazy Californian. You're like the third person who said to me about this like whole plant medicine thing that like all you guys are doing. And so, you know, I realize I'm in a microcosm perhaps, but at the same time, this stuff is like blossoming so quickly. Like I hold stock in several companies that are about psychedelics. I'm like, yeah. I mean, it's here. And so if somebody wants
to put your money where your mouth is then, right?
Like, yeah. Yeah. But if someone
believe in it, you believe in that company or the vision they have for where it's going.
Well, I believe in the movement for sure, you know, and I had to vote on the auditors. And so I know the big four out there auditing these companies. They're just not talking about it so loud just yet.
Yeah. Yep.
I like to say I have the Eminem of finance on here because his name reminds me of Eminem, but we've got Evan Eneman on here. So Evan, I'm going to read off some of your about page from Sands Lane because it's so aligned with what we talk about here at Accounting High and what I talk about at my firm. So I'm going to start with that. So Sands Lane, we are a human-centered ecosystem committed to creating a positive impact. And some of their values that they believe. Creativity is within all of us. Collaboration is critical. Humans innovate. Technology enables our vision. Evan is the founder and CEO of Sands Lane. And part of his quote says, "We are building here. It never feels like work. We are all enjoying our lives and we are engaging in the positive impact that we put on the earth to achieve." Evan, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
This is dope. We're here to continue the DARE special, our after school drug awareness special at Accounting High. And you were placed in my hands as the expert. Amber Setter said, Evan's the expert. We're going to have to get him on here if we're going to do any kind of awareness because Evan's been in this field for a while now. So Evan, why don't you introduce yourself to our students?
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's good to be known as the drug expert in the world of accounting, although I'm not sure exactly that's the title I'd want to have.
I mean, I'm the drug F-up in the world of accounting is what I'm kind of known as, but...
Well, that works. Well, I'll give you the sort of quick rundown on the professional services accounting side. I started my career at PricewaterhouseCoopers right out of school. Was there on and off in New York and then LA for about 11 years in total. So I definitely put in my big four time, if you will, primarily around things in the nature of technology, operations, risk, strategy. This is all in financial services and then healthcare and media and entertainment and technology. So I did that thing. And, you know, later on, there's a bunch of stuff in the middle where I got involved in a lot of brand and experiential entertainment, hospitality businesses, both building and running them both in New York and L.A., had a bunch of opportunities around that. And ultimately that culminated in a few things related to these cultural touch points and elements that I was involved in being tied to some artists. And one of which Snoop Dogg and built a bunch of businesses with and for him that happened to be in the cannabis space. Because as these things were happening, there was legalization in Colorado and Washington State. And everyone was trying to think about, is there this opportunity? What is it? And with Snoop, you know, he's an icon and has been doing a lot of work in early stage tech, in early stage consumer tech. And he was very early on Instagram. And so he got involved in VC and investing in these types of things. And so we were looking at the landscape and saying, well, is there an opportunity here? Sure. Built out a VC firm, built out a creative agency, built out a professional services platform, which was the first foray into a cannabis practice. I built one of the largest cannabis practices in the U.S. and probably internationally. Back in 2018 or from 2017 to roughly 2020, and now have a new version of that practice with a firm called Adeptus Partners. I'm a partner with them and responsible for building out everything in the world of cannabis and psychedelics. You know, psychedelics is a more recent topic of interest for a lot of different companies, investors, and service providers. So in my worldview, all things plant medicine are very meaningful, whether it's the business side of that, which is what business professionals and accountants may want to talk about, but more importantly, on the social side and the interaction of individuals and humans, the people that make up these professional services firms, and the impact that these plant substances have, positive impact on their lives. And, you know, with that, there's obviously risks and negative externalities as well that we have to consider. But, you know, my path comes from a professional background, a business background, but I've been well-rooted in culture and entertainment and hospitality for my entire life as well. And so the emergence of these industries around plant substances has been really interesting. And so for me, it was a natural connection to getting involved on the brand, marketing, content, but also in some ways, almost more importantly, in the accounting and the infrastructure, the trust side of what's needed for these industries to actually take place and take shape.
So. Oh, wow. I love how you waited until we started recording to drop the Snoop Dogg element of this. I didn't even know that. We had talked for maybe 2 hours before, and I didn't even know that you were working with Snoop. That's so dope.
I don't anymore. So that's, you know, I've had a lot of these really interesting times in my life. And I say I've lived many lives where I just, you know, I come in and out of these different environments because I work with so many different creative people. And he happens to be one, and obviously a very big one, former friend, colleague of mine. But, you know, it was an interesting experience, you know, using someone as a platform to build these opportunities. For me, it's always about audience and voice and can you reach people and positively impact their lives. I've moved on to do more of that in ways that I believe I want to do it in different ways, both in business and in the brands that we build. But it was pretty cool. This is someone that, to me, just represents most of my older childhood. You know, that was my senior year in high school. So I had a formative time in my life listening and growing up with hip hop forever. So it was an interesting time.
Yeah, well, you can't go on the show without mentioning high school or some type of formative element there. So
all education.
That's dope. Let's talk about the stigma associated with a lot of this, because I still get a lot of, not backlash, but a lot of apprehension for people to want to be involved with what I'm doing because I talk about smoking weed. And it's legal in most states now. And I just talk about it because I try to normalize it. I'm trying to pull back and not talk about it as much because it's not about that. It's about what we do at our practices. It's about accounting and all that. So I'm not even really, but for today, for our special, we could talk about it all we want. This is wide open. So let's talk about the stigmas associated with some of these, especially with the up and coming psychedelics movement and even still the cannabis movement that's going on.
They're still here and they're very real. Media is an interesting force, but also influence from people that we trust is a really interesting force. And in the world of quote unquote drugs, whether we're talking about cannabis or psychedelics or anything, there's been a very clear connection to industry and media and how media represents plant substances that might interfere with industry. Absent that financial connection, I don't think we'd ever have the stigma that we have. You know, socially, these were things that were well accepted for thousands of years until a very, very, very recent past, mostly in the 1900s, but maybe a little bit before then and certainly present today. And, you know, I think to your point, the only way to address a stigma is to address it head on and talk about it and show what the differences are when someone makes that association from dare, do not use drugs, say no to drugs, drugs are bad, this is your brain on drugs.
This is drugs. This is your brain on drugs. Any questions?
Actually, that was entirely inaccurate, detrimental, and something that has caused significant loss and damage to our society, both financially and socially. And so that's a hard topic to accept being wrong about. And then we double that with lack of, you know, maybe some research, because we've not allowed for research to happen. So it's like a really nice way that you can say, well, there's no research. Well, you don't allow research. How can we research and give you the facts? But even with that, the data is there that supports a lot of these things. And, you know, there is a reality to what some of those stigmas are about, you know, a sort of stoner vibe, if you will. Well, certain people use substances to zone out. That happens every day. Could be alcohol. It could be running. It could be a million. Could be food. It could be weed. Other people use those same things for healthy reasons to zone in. And so when I always say that to me, I zone in if I'm using the substance for a reason. I have intent behind it. It might be for focus. It might be for clarity. It might be for whatever that reason is. It might be to relax, which is zoning into my body's needs to relax. So it's all of the above, but it's a conscious decision to use it with purpose. And it's the same plant. So we stigmatize something because, well, certain people use it for reasons that may not be in their best interest. And there may be reasons for that, underlying reasons. This gets to the mental health and mental wellness topic of what's underlying our anxieties, what's underlining all these different things that we have. It's not the substance that we use necessarily. The substance isn't necessarily bad. It might be the things before it, the trauma, whatever it may be, the anxiety, the depression, the mental health issues. Those substances aren't bad in and of themselves. And we've made them out to be exceptionally bad, and the people who use them even worse. I can confidently say cannabis and psychedelics and plant medicine is a big part of my life. I've been a very active professional for my entire career, over 20 some odd years. And it's a very useful tool, or all of these are very useful tools when used for that purpose. They certainly can have implications of sort of, like I said, negative externalities or issues that some people have with them. But from a professional standpoint, if I show up to work and I do my job and I'm performing well, and I don't have an actual use issue, then that should actually be viewed as a good thing. I'm actually understanding my behaviors, my body, the way I work and the way I interact with others. And I happen to have a healthy relationship with plant substances that are tools for me, positive tools for me.
It's and you're good. Not a slacker. You're not somebody. No. You've been very successful, and you're running and part of lots of businesses right now. So for people to always associate, let's just say, cannabis users with the 70s style slackers, the people who just effed up in school, like,
she's stoned. She's on weed. Most of the things that are dangerous about cigarettes also apply to marijuana, but pot's worse. It makes you lose your memory and motivation. Pretty soon, the things that make you an interesting, valuable person vanish, and then you're left with an empty life, and there's nothing to laugh at.
I was part of that crew in high school. I was in the stoner crew in high school, and half of us got very good grades. We did very well in school. We were slackers in a lot of respects, but only for the things that we didn't want to do. But if we wanted to get grades, we did. You know, to get into a good school and all that. I think there's a wrongful association with it is something that zones you out. I think there are things that are legal today that zone us out, like you mentioned, alcohol. Prescription drugs, a lot of them zone you out. And there are a lot of them that zone you in even more. And if we're going to talk about ADHD and Adderall, Ritalin, and all of those are zoning you further in. So the zone out, the zone in, I like that scenario, or I like the way you put that there, because it implies that people are doing this for a certain purpose. And if they associate that with, well, I think that's used for the purpose of zoning out, then that's all they're going to think of. When they're framing it, any conversation. So it's about opening up the conversation to realize that this is medicine, just like anything you get at Walgreens is.
And I'll give you an example of that. And you know, in the realm of psychedelics, obviously it's even harder because there's, you know, less time since it's been viewed as a positive tool, in terms of the media attention around it, but it's actually been more favorable because there was a large history of data from well-respected research institutions around the good that can come out of this for therapeutic use and personal use. But if you think about it, to what you just said, you zoned out of this stuff you didn't really care about or weren't interested in as what you were doing in high school. And well, that's perfectly fine. That's perfectly normal at any stage of life. And what if in that same time frame where chemistry or biology or physics was like, this is the most uninteresting thing I can ever sit in, you're going to slack off and get a C. But if, and I don't recommend substances unless they're approved and people understand them, what if you are of a certain age and you take a substance that actually helps you to understand that there's wonder in those topics, how things work, the natural order of things actually are science class in high school. It's biology, mm-hmm. it's physics, all these things work. Now that child brain of like, well, what is this? That's how you show up to that learning environment. So you're going to want to learn more because you're interested in it. You've created curious. That connection again. You're curious again. So these are powerful tools for good, or maybe not for good, but when they're framed in that orientation of these are positive tools and they can actually enhance what you're doing without going beyond where the realm of control is, those are really good things to have in our functional society because we have enough in our dysfunctional society. And I think our goals as professionals, you know, one of our key goals is to create that normalcy and talk about it openly. And that's only going to get there with more of these conversations and hopefully less media portrayals of people that flaunt it a little too much. I think that's part of the problem as well. And, so, you know, there are other things around that too.
So I'll center it back with a story. Growing up, I never talked to my parents about drugs or anything. Never had any conversation. I mean, yeah, we would talk about it, but I never really had deep conversations. It would always be just the topic of, are you doing it or not? Or, and am I getting in trouble for using it or whatever? But it was no education around it at all until after I got arrested for selling drugs. Like it was just, there was things that I did, you know, and we can... we can get into that and a whole psychology behind that and what that means. But just the fact that I couldn't even be educated because it was something that was taboo that you couldn't talk about. Maybe some families did, or maybe some people witnessed that and some people lived through it to learn. But I was learning on my own. I was learning everything that I've learned from peers and on the streets and everything. So it was like, maybe we should have had that conversation, but the conversation was had on the DARE special after school. I come home and there's cartoons on every single channel and it's all the cartoons together and it's everybody telling you don't do drugs. Like all of my favorite shows on TV. Do you remember this special? It was like broadcast for everybody to see sometime in the 80s, I think.
Some kids tried to get him to do drugs.
Beat it! I've done some dopey things, but I'll never do dope.
Drug free's the way to be.
I just want to shake some sense into you kids that are using drugs and think about using. So remember, don't, or else. Okay?
By the way, don't do drugs, but take all the Ritalin in the world that you can.
Yeah. Don't do drugs, but here's a prescription for every drug that you need now to succeed. And I never was prescribed Ritalin, but my brother was. And so he has been on drugs his whole life. I didn't start taking all those till I was having fun with it in college, like just to experiment. Now I take it every day for my ADHD, but it's really just all of these things. Drugs can help you zone in. You know, it helps me focus. It helps me zone in. And there are things that help. There are things that I use intentionally to zone out. So I love the way you frame that. So how do we frame that in a business sense too? Because I do want part of this episode to talk about the business opportunities with these. I just wanted to clear the air as far as how stigmas go because, you know, I don't consider myself a bad person. I did some bad things. I sold drugs. It was illegal what I was doing. I saw opportunity. I was terrible at it. I got caught. Like it wasn't like anything I'm really that proud of, but I was making some money. I was getting good grades. I was still doing very well in all aspects. I had a job. That was my job. Again, terrible at it. I got caught. But these are things, you know, you learn along the way. I'm not sure if I regret anything I did because now you can do that at the store. You can buy most of the stuff at the store. And we're talking about legalizing a lot of things. So
we're a businessman. And now that business is legal in many states. So time changes in some ways what is considered legal and illegal, especially when it's a substance that was made to be criminalized for a reason. So anyway, that's a whole other dynamic, but
It's a whole other conversation too.
Yeah,
I've told my mom I'm going to stop talking about this, but now I'm doing a full special on it. I'm leaning in even further. So, but
I
all
will
of that.
Say, I think that's the important part of it, is to lean into that conversation. Obviously, there's different experiences that people have had with getting arrested for drugs. People's lives have been destroyed by being arrested for things that are now fully legal, that billions of dollars a year run through these business channels. So if you think about that juxtaposition of, well, now today, is there a real opportunity to provide professional services, to invest, to develop businesses? The answer is yes. Some people lost their entire lives. There's families that have been destroyed because of it. Yet here we're having this conversation on a podcast. So there's still a lot to be corrected for. And so, you know, part of what I always try and remember in anything I'm doing is I'm very fortunate to be in the position I am. I'm very fortunate to be able to talk to you about, there are these great opportunities and we can go into many of them, but there's still a reality. There are still people locked up in jail for selling, walking with, or consuming cannabis, bag of weed. And all the business opportunities in the world doesn't give that person back their life and their family's life. So
bag of plants.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mushrooms that should pizza. You know what I mean? So,
hey, well, there are pizza places that hint at that. Mellow Mushroom is a really popular pizza place around me. And that's sort of the joke, right? It's got a guy that looks like a mushroom that looks like he's high on the front cover, you know, like these are, I go to all cities and I find high burger. Yeah. I mean, it's just everywhere. So let's pivot a little bit. I know that there's so much more we could talk about here, and I know there's so much we're leaving off the table. There's another special that we're going to do at Accounting High, the DEI special, where we talk about race and the implications of all of that, and I think we could weave these together there. But for now, let's keep it on the drug talk. Let's go further into the business side of this. You grew a very successful practice with a niche in the – what year was this that you started with this practice?
So I originally started that practice in 2017, and now it's a different firm, but it's been for about 6 years now, having that niche in the sort of accounting professional services area.
Okay. And so first of all, you have a practice that has a niche, and that's very, very, very far ahead of the curve for most practices that just do generalized work, that do everything for everybody. So right there, you're probably working with in the cloud. Like what was your role in this practice early on?
Conceived it, built it, ran it, made sure it was actually a viable way to connect and engage with potential clients and helping them build trust and transparency, not just in their businesses, but also in the category as it was developing, meaning that in the earlier stage, cannabis as an industry and now inclusive of, you know, psychedelics and other plant medicine.
And you started it just for the purpose of cannabis. It wasn't a general practice that you changed. No,
it was a cannabis practice that we built out. And it came from all the other work I was doing in venture capital around cannabis investments and technology investments and brand building and marketing in that same area. So it was the business operational and technical side that's needed for brands and operators to work. And that's really was the genesis of it.
Dope. So dope, no pun intended. I've seen dope CEO and dope things for cannabis. I'm sure you've seen like podcasts and other finance, the dope. Did you have a vision for what you want? Like you're involved in a lot of businesses now. Like, are you saying yes to every opportunity, or all of these your ideas?
It's a little bit of both. In terms of my ideas, always no. Some of these are opportunities that partners have brought and we've evaluated together and gone into together. But it is all stemming from the same vision and really what Sands Lane represents and that whole ecosystem idea of, can we create this purpose-driven ecosystem to create businesses and brands or support other businesses and brands that can have a meaningful impact in other people's lives? And from my view, brands are the carriers to a lot of those messages to consumers. We interact with them every single day. They interact with us every single day. So it's a really great place to inject what could be good practice to how to treat your consumers, you know, the people that work for you, and continue to generate good business and then actually run a viable business. So it sort of came from that. And ultimately, we don't take on everything. That would be way too much. You know, we do provide services for a fee. You know, we have a professional services firm. So that's the sort of core of the business. But we also invest in companies both with our time and with some capital at different times as well. So it's a hybrid model. We look at every opportunity as a hybrid opportunity. You know, it's really a 360 view. We only may do one thing. Like, we only may support someone on tax needs, but we understand all the implications of their marketing budget. Well, that has a direct implication on their tax benefits or not, depending on how they run their business, but also it helps them grow their business. So we look at everything. We know everything. We may only support one area, but that's how it came to be.
Yeah. So you can fully come to the table with other solutions when they're ready for it. If they are, you're helping somebody in their entrepreneurial journey, not just for one-off compliance work or Absolutely. Anything like that.
Absolutely.
I notice a lot of the businesses associated are somewhat like cannabis related, or I don't know if any of those are psychedelic. I can just tell based on the branding that it's still very centered around the same umbrella of a niche that you're in. So anything you do say yes to, any opportunity that reveals itself still has been filtered through. There's no like just things that come up out of nowhere, but it's sort of like underneath your umbrella of a niche.
Yeah, I would say cannabis and psychedelics, plant medicine broadly, is a filter that we look at mostly because what they are, they're ingredients to a lot of other things. So yes, it's present. It doesn't have to be the predominant aspect of the business. I mean, we have lifestyle businesses that are just apparel companies, like yoga apparel for men. Mm-hmm. Nothing to do with cannabis or psychedelics, but everything to do with lifestyle. Mindfulness, meditation, yoga, these are all things that plant medicine tied directly into. So is it the exact same niche? No. But from an ecosystem perspective, they actually are viable partners and collaborative partners in an ecosystem. So that's how we think about it more is, do all these different aspects help each other in some way, even if not directly, indirectly, by creating more of that positive community, more of that energy that we can share and hopefully reduce stigma, create good business opportunities, treat people, all those different elements that we want to embed. So it's not, oh, it has to be a cannabis brand. And the brands that we have, most of them cover both. And I wouldn't say they're lifestyle brands per se, but the ingredient that may go into a product could be a psychedelic, an entheogen, or any other, or it could be derived from the cannabis plant. So that's how we think about it is, you know, we may have a beverage brand, and today we can legally have a cannabis or hemp-based beverage brand or adaptogen beverage. We can't have a psychedelic beverage yet, but that is absolutely part of the brand ethos and will be part of the product mix, because if we're creating products and services to help people, whether it's for mental health and wellness or for other reasons, whatever tools we can use to help, that's what we're going to use.
So I was kind of leading to the diversity of your portfolio. It seems like there is a lot in the fact that a lot of this stuff is legal and it's here to stay, and you see a future in it. So you're investing in it because it's still very, very early in as far as cannabis still. It's not legal in my state. It's very, very ready to be because they're selling Delta THC, Delta 8, 9, and 10, which basically is the same thing, but it feels like the same thing. I'm not sure. Like, and there's stores everywhere that have it. So basically we're ready for it to flip the switch. But at the end of the day, this is still very early, very early for psychedelics, because I remember being in Denver when they first announced that psilocybin was going to be legal or decriminalized. You still couldn't buy it in the stores. You might be able to now. There's about two or three states. Why don't you tell us the legal landscape of psilocybin too, just so we're all clear.
Yeah, so there's, I mean, a lot of movement most recently in California. Actually, there's a bill that's moving to Governor Newsom's desk to, you know, to essentially do the same thing, both decriminalize and in certain ways legalize the therapeutic use or the possession or growing of plants or fungi or whatever it may be. So similar to Oregon, Colorado, other municipalities and jurisdictions. We're seeing a lot of these laws being passed and regulatory schemes being put in place, which allow for, well, certainly for research right now, but from a commercial standpoint, the therapeutic use. And so what that allows people to do is, A, if you grow it yourself and use it yourself, that's generally, you know, allowed in these different jurisdictions. But there's no retail sales per se. So you have to go to a therapy center. So from a sort of drug development standpoint, you can develop proper tested research substances that go through this therapy center that are administered to patients in that center. You can't sell to a patient and let them go home and use it on their own. There are other things that you can, like ketamine, which can be done nationally, either in a clinic or direct to consumer, you know, a mail order, you know, prescription or subscription. So there's a very diverse myriad of laws and regulations that are happening, not just domestically in the U.S., but certainly internationally. We're seeing a lot more of that federal viewpoint internationally. Canada, Australia just approved psilocybin and really? Other. Well, and these are huge, huge leaps forward for what the legalization of psychedelics looks like in the future. Because when a country federally approves psychedelic assisted therapies, you don't have this patchwork of the stigma anymore. You know, well, in our little town, we don't allow for it.
Stigma goes away.
It goes away, and it goes away very quickly. And so that also is where the opportunity is. So when we think about the business case, well, for pharmaceutical companies, for healthcare companies, maybe not good, but for public health and cost, so there's some research, MAPS, which is the Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies. They did some research on the net savings of treatment-resistant PTSD with MDMA, and roughly the net savings over some period of time, 20, 30 years, is over $100 million. Now, is that huge? That's a big number. What can you do with $100 million for society? Well, you can start to build other community-based services if you need. But that's just a fraction, a small, small fraction, because that's just in Australia, of how these tools can be used to enable business and the people that create the business and operate the business, the individuals themselves, to perform better. So there's a real financial incentive to both invest in these therapies and support the growth of these therapies as well.
And it's all human-centered.
It's all
always goes back to that. That's why I started out with your About Us page.
Yeah.
I think this is
one other thing I always say with that is, you know, I really dislike when someone says it's not personal, it's just business. And the reality, ooh, everything you do is personal. The people that you're interacting with and affecting are people, they're humans. So it is never just business. And so to that same point, it has to be a human-centered conversation for all this to work. Because if not, you're ultimately hurting others potentially by your actions or inaction. And that is where, you know, it gets really difficult to feel good about yourself every day, at least for me, if you know that your intention.
Dude, that is so huge. That's the big mindset shift that we're seeing in most professions, or at least in the professional world. Maybe it took COVID. Maybe it took everybody being connected to start talking about it more. But everybody always talks about work-life balance. That's too. And things being for business and having no soul over it, just making decisions purely. That's purely for greed. When you use that phrase, business, not personal, that means I'm greedy and I don't care about you.
Correct.
That's what they're saying to you, basically. If somebody's ever said that to you and says, I'm sorry, this is just a business thing. I care about me and my future, not yours. Sorry. Like that sorry is an empty sorry.
And not even future, maybe your well-being today, the impact
yeah.
that I'm going to have on you. And yeah, that's real.
Yeah. And it could come in all aspects, but I think that's one thing that I've been trying to, at least in the last couple of years, been trying to work out in my head, like, can they be the same thing? And the answer is obvious, is they can. I just didn't know that. Most of my life, it was always told that you're one person here and you're somebody else there. And you're somebody else there too. There's usually about three. You got your work, your home, and then out with your friends. Like those are all supposed to be three different things. So It's
Talk about trying to be in a big four environment and being yourself. You do not have.
You're going to get fired.
Well,
I got fired for listening to music on an audit.
It's an interesting world. It's keep plugging away.
Yeah. So for anybody like looking at this in a way of still apprehension, where can they go or what can they do to learn a little bit more?
Apprehension, you mean of
like they're scared of it. They're still like
from a business standpoint though.
Yeah, from a business perspective, like
so there's probably a couple different places you can go, but sort of stepping back to like the mindset of I'm scared of getting involved in this business. And there are certainly industries that you may have that feeling around, the gun industry, the alcohol industry, the pharmaceutical industry. If you can get your head around those,
OnlyFans,
whatever it may be, if you can get your head
accounting around vices that, is a brand that I wanted to start. Sands Lane is my accounting vices. Yeah.
That's it. What is different? Nothing. The only difference is these happen to be, for the most part, plants that are beneficial, things that are beneficial if used in the right way. And from a business standpoint, do you want to support that future or do you not? Are you scared of that future or not? Because where they're already legal and there have been laws passed to protect you as a professional, which there have been, very many state bars have come out to say, if you're a lawyer and you're practicing, you're protected. Now, if you break the law, that's different. But if you comply with state law and then obviously disclose what it is, a federal law, it's legal. So if you have apprehension, find those channels that are legal and support the businesses there if that's your limitation. If it's not, and it's saying, well, is there even a reason to do the work? Well, there's absolutely industries being developed with billions of dollars of money moving around and not everyone's flush with cash. This is not a good time from a business standpoint in these categories. They've been severely restrained economically because they are illegal in some ways and in others. But the opportunity to start to invest, to start to look at, you can go online. There are tons of research now around psychedelics and the performance enhancement of business, the well-being benefit of employees when they have these experiences to heal their traumas and can show up to work much more positively, all these different elements. So there's the cost savings, the economic benefits, and then there's the personal benefit. But any particular site, I'm trying to think of one that would really highlight that. I think it's just more doing some searches online of where psychedelics and cannabis and business.
GPT could probably help too.
Yeah, of course. Sure. There are some sites like, Forbes covers it a lot. Benzinga covers it. Marijuana Moment is a channel that does a really good job highlighting the political and policy and regulatory side of psychedelics and cannabis. That's a great resource for what's happening on the federal level, what's happening on the state level. Where are these intersecting with business? They give a really good perspective on that. It's just if a New York Times journalist was to cover it consistently, it's that level or quality of reporting. So there are sites out there, but I would just say more reach out to the professionals that are talking about it right now. You know, there are plenty of lawyers, accountants, advisors, strategists that are talking and supporting cannabis and psychedelics businesses, cannabis and psychedelics personalities who might be athletes or entertainers, whoever. We're out there. Just reach out.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are just unsure if it's okay to talk about it too. Honestly, I was probably unsure until I started doing it and then I started to get some backlash. So the backlash that I got was from people that are still on the fence of, is this something you should be talking about or can be talking about? So just talking about it, if that's like a stigma, there's companies that still, you know, have very clear guidelines on what you can and can't do or say and talk about. And people that are concerned about that, like they work for these companies. And what if they say something online and they think they're going to get fired because they're talking about smoking weed?
Yeah. And maybe then that's not the right company to be at long term.
That's, you know, very true too.
Or maybe you want to change that company from the inside. So you might have to take a longer term view. Now, I was very vocal when I was at PricewaterhouseCoopers and it did not go very well for me. This is very early on. This is 2016, 2015. I was out in public domain talking about these industries and the different work I was doing on the side, personally investing in and supporting companies. And that was not viewed very favorably by that organization at the time. Now they have a cannabis practice. They probably have a psychedelic practice. I don't know. It takes time for large organizations to look at the risk factor for them, the reputational risk, the financial risk, all these other elements to be comfortable. So if you're a professional in that setting and you have a concern about your career path, A, don't talk about it, even if you are personally doing the work and experiencing that. B, think about how you want to be able to talk about it. And maybe if it's at a different organization or at the same one you're at, start to have the conversation, because talking about something isn't bad. You can even sit with HR and say, I'm really interested in having these conversations about these substances. They're legal here, here, and here. This state does this and that government does that. Can we talk about it? And they may be able to steer you to, well, actually, we've had an internal private work group that is talking about how does the firm position ourselves related to psychedelics? Well, now you just went through a proper channel to work through HR, work through your manager, coach, or work through your partner, whoever it may be, to have a conversation that is of interest to you, that might be a benefit to the firm. That's a more nuanced way of going about it than jumping on Instagram, you know, smoking a joint. Your HR manager sees that, yeah, that might have negative repercussions. It shouldn't, but it might. So just being mindful around how you engage and want to communicate is part of it. But hopefully, again, the more of these conversations we have, the more people feel comfortable. There are pathways to these conversations.
Well, I should have started with saying how much I love the bookshelf too. It's for anybody that's not watching. You got a lot of your brands out behind you too, and everything's laid out and it's like super clean, but also very busy. And it's all the same color scheme too. These are different things. So I'm fascinated by it, but that's because I'm fascinated by colors and all that. So
that's cool. Color block bookshelf right behind you.
Oh yeah. Well, mine gets commented on all the time. It's pretty obvious. Yours is subtle too. So it's dope. Well, subtle, obvious, but perspective. Thanks for coming on, Evan. This has been dope. This has been really good conversation. I hope that our students have taken something away from this special, whether it be a little bit more knowledge or just a little bit less stigma, or just open to the possibilities of this. You're growing a lot of different brands and they're all associated with this, and you're seeing a lot of success. So seems like others should take notice. Thanks, homie.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
While you're here, don't forget to follow us on Spotify or subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you may be listening to us right now so you don't miss out on any new episodes. Share this episode on social media, tagging us at Accounting High. And feel free to leave us a 5-star review letting us know how the school year is treating you.